Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Leveraged buyouts, maximizing profits over people, astronomical executive pay packages, creative accounting, the financialization of everything, and, well, the financial crisis itself. They are all part of a rogues gallery of questionable corporate practices over the past many decades. And financial journalist Duff McDonald says there's one thing that binds them all together: Harvard Business School. In his new book, The Golden Passport, McDonald casts a supercritical eye over the business school's century-long history and asks, is Harvard Business School complicit and even responsible for the moral failings of American capitalism? Duff McDonald joins us now from NPR in New York. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me, Meghna.
So you've gone after the biggest of the big here in terms of business schools. Why Harvard? Do you really believe that it's at the core of the failing of capitalism in America?
Harvard is one of the oldest and largest and most influential of the business schools, and arguably has had the most influence of all of them. The book could be seen as a criticism of modern MBA teaching in general, but so many of the genealogy strands of it lead back to HBS that it serves as a good enough central character.
Yeah. So let me ask you, though. In the book, you write about how at the founding or the creation of Harvard Business School, there was this sense, this idea that a question of moral leadership should be, you know, part of what is taught there. So tell us about that.
Yeah. Before the school was founded, the people who were in support of the idea, the first people that had to get the idea passed were the overseers of Harvard itself, and they met with initial resistance, which I guess you could characterize as, we don't do trade schools. You know, we're about a life of the mind here, not about the daily grind. And the response to that from the founders of HBS was, oh, no, we're not interested in, teaching bookkeeping or making treasurers. We want to educate an enlightened managerial elite that understands its responsibilities not just to their companies but to the rest of society.
Mm-hmm.
And the Harvard folks were like, oh, now you're talking a kind of Harvard idea. And I think what happened is, if what you're really about is career acceleration and maximizing earnings potential, there's nothing to be ashamed of about those things. But you hardly want to go around telling people that that's what you're all about. And so they draped over themselves this idea of a moral right to lead and have been repeating it so often that they've convinced themselves that they are not only successful, they are right. And I think that very fact has led them astray too many times.
Well, and it's not just Harvard Business School itself that thinks it's right. I mean, American business writ large frequently thinks that Harvard is right. Otherwise, their influence wouldn't ever leave, the campus of the business school itself. I think that's one of the reasons why what you're saying here has caught so many people's interest.
Oh, sure. So look, don't get me wrong. The HBS has made many significant positive contributions to American business, including in the first half of the century laying the foundations for American managerial excellence. And they have done significant and extensive work in all sorts of disciplines, from strategy to organizational behavior, et cetera. So I in no way want to take away from those things. It's that you've kept repeating to yourselves all the good that you're doing, that you're turning a blind eye to all the downsides of what you teach and how you teach. Take, for example, the whole issue of pricing in pharmaceuticals these days.
Right.
That there are executives who actually can walk into a meeting and say, you know what, it's a good idea that we should jack this up to 5, 10x times what people can afford because it's good for the bottom line. The fact that that kind of thinking can even happen is, you know, you can trace it back to the moral ambiguity in the case method as taught at Harvard Business School.
So I want to dive into another specific example that you raise in the book. I mean, you look at the whole history of Harvard Business School, but there's one that I want to get much more detail from you on. And I have to say, this is someone who's still living. Michael Jensen, an economist and Harvard Business School professor who really did provide the sort of intellectual foundation for many of the business practices, which, you know, depending on who you are, you might think that they're terrible or they're foundational in America today. But, you know, he's the one who brought the intellectual reasoning behind leverage buyouts and corporate pay packages. Tell us more about why you wanted to focus on him.
Okay. Just as a preface to that, in the most recent issue of Harvard Business Review, there's an article written by a couple of HBS professors basically refuting Michael Jensen and saying, it's all wrong. We don't believe that. And pretty much saying things that are in precise agreement with me. And in some of the original responses to the book, they said McDonald's focused on Michael Jensen. That's in the past. And, you know, I was focused on Michael Jensen, but when I was talking about the era of Michael Jensen.
Right.
So he basically helped yank the country towards shareholder capitalism and said stuff like golden parachutes are good for shareholders and leverage buyouts create value without any qualification. And that was – it was the 80s and 90s, and it took us into a place where the North Star for this nation is share price.
Yeah.
HBS itself regrets that today. It's, you know, I don't know this for sure, but I don't think it's much of a coincidence that that article came out in the exact same time as my book did. And so the fact that we're in agreement on that and they say we've moved on. And my point is, well, the rest of us haven't. Right. Every major public company in this country is run for share price today. Short term decisions that value, again, profits over people. That's his legacy. That's on Harvard. The rest of us, I don't care if they've moved on. Society hasn't. And they played a huge part in getting us where we are.
Yeah. I wonder, though, is the real story here not so much what's come out of Harvard Business School, even though obviously the specifics matter, but more so that Harvard was just extraordinarily, or was, and perhaps still is, extraordinarily good at doing things that come natural to, or I'm going to say, trying to figure out the right way to say this. Harvard did a great job at providing the intellectual basis to justify what people are naturally tend to do anyway. Like the powerful will seek more power. The wealthy will seek more wealth. And short of society saying no and regulating, for example, that's the natural course of things.
Right. So my response to that, if you talk about the 80s and sort of the Gordon Gekko era of greed, HBS didn't invent that, obviously. So on the one hand, HBS wants to claim influence. In this instance, they would like to not claim influence. So for the sake of argument, let's take them at their word that they weren't so influential there. Then what was their role as part of Harvard and an institution of higher learning? It's to try and clarify the thinking of the students and keep us honest to ourselves, right? And instead, they were cheerleaders for the moment. So either they caused it, or if they don't want to claim that influence, all they were doing was standing on the sidelines with their pom-poms rooting everyone on. They can have either one. Doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, we did reach out to Harvard Business School and to see if we could speak with Dean Nitin Noria. They declined and instead pointed us to a conversation that Dean Noria had with the Harvard Crimson. And, you know, he said things to the Crimson such as, in many ways, I think the book doesn't give justice to the many ways in which Harvard Business School is trying and has always tried to remind its graduates that as business leaders, they do have a deep and important relationship with society, and that the health of society is something that is their responsibility. And I was wondering what your reaction is to that. I mean, Harvard didn't let you talk to anyone while you were researching this book, right?
No, and I actually lost interest in what Dean Noria had to say about the book in that article after he had admitted not having read it. So I'm not sure how he came by his understanding of what it omits or overstates, because he hadn't read it at that point.
Okay, so let me let me back up here a little bit, because I actually did speak with Dean Noria back in 2011, early on when in his deanship of Harvard Business School, because I wanted to ask him, and I did ask him back then, all these questions about ethical education and creating the next generation of ethical management and business leaders. And we had a pretty deep conversation about that. And so I just want to play one or two pieces of tape and get you to respond to that. Here he Sure. is. This is Dean Noria again. And he told me what he thought is actually wrong with management education. Again, this is in 2011.
I just felt that business education had lost this original animating purpose, and that it was time to remind us that, much like doctors have a Hippocratic Oath and lawyers care to take the bar and think about their education as animating them towards creating justice in society, that business leaders also had a responsibility of thinking that their first goal was to create prosperity for society. And if they created value for society, then they could keep value for themselves.
So, Mr. McDonald, I mean, whether or not Dean Noria has read your book yet, that's what he told me back in 2011. Does that give you a little bit of hope about leadership at Harvard Business School?
Sure. And he and I agree that it's that they have lost sight of it and periodically lose sight of it for a long time. But and you know, it's great to say those words, but, you know, follow through would be more preferable. You know, it's interesting. There was a review in the Journal last week, of Wall Street Journal, of the book last week, and yeah. There was a letter in it today that the headline for it was "Nothing inspires envy more than success," and it suggested I should be ashamed of myself for degrading one of the world's great schools. And it's
Harvard can weather this. I mean,
yeah, it's like that
honest.
Kind of attitude, though. It's like, if your hierarchy of values is so out of whack that you think that whatever the narrow version that constitutes success for you at Harvard Business School, which tends to be money, is something that causes envy in everyone else, like, that's the whole problem yeah. here. It's that you've narrowed your thinking. The school takes these ambitious, smart, and capable young people and narrows their thinking. And when they could be widening it, isn't that what Harvard's supposed to do?
Right. So that's the question. What are they good at versus what their actual purpose should be, right? But I mean, you don't mince words in the book at all. You basically say that American business schools as a whole, Harvard being pinnacle amongst them, are private sector madrasas. And you actually talk to Casey Gerald, who graduated a couple of years ago from Harvard Business School, and he told you that for a whole semester, the school is, quote, basically bought and paid for by the consulting firms. You can't go to lunch without seeing someone from Bain, Boston Consulting Group, or McKinsey. You know, on the other hand, some might say, what's wrong with that?
Sure. If you want to be clear about that's what you're doing, that you're basically pimping out your best graduates to Wall Street, that's fine. I wouldn't criticize you for that, but that's not what you say you're doing. So, you know, the point is, like, if you're going to convince your graduates that their whole lives are morally righteous simply by virtue of having attended Harvard Business School, which is essentially what they tell each other, then you should probably add a stronger and more apparent moral and ethical component to your teachings instead of stuff like allowing your professors to consult for the same companies that they're supposed to be viewing objectively and explaining not be beholden to corporate money. And it's just they're so conflicted, it's hard to know where to start.
Yeah. Well, again, back in 2011, when I spoke with Dean Nathan Noria, he did talk about trying to figure out ways to create conversations, in his words, that allow business students to think harder about the responsibilities they have to society. Hang on. With you, right? But hang on here, yeah. Because then we also talked with Eugene Soltis. He's a professor at Harvard Business School. He wrote a book about white-collar criminals, and I asked him about teaching more ethics in business school. And here's what he said.
the trouble is that the time they spend thinking about this, it's ultimately 2 years, or in an ethics class, it's 40 or 50 hours in the classroom. Let's say they go work at a bank. That's equivalent to their first 3 days of work. This is where one of the challenges that we face is, how do you get back that spirit? How do you rekindle those things that you might have been thinking when you had the time to step back and think?
We just have 10 seconds, really, Duff McDonald. Your final takeaway on the challenges of creating socially responsible business leaders?
I wish Dean Noria well. I hope he does the job he said he set out to do. It'd be great if he did, but he's not doing it at this point.
Well, Duff McDonald's new book is The Golden Passport, Harvard Business School, The Limits of Capitalism, and the Moral Failure of the MBA Elite. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.